Welcome to Family Talk with your hosts, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to Family Talk today. Did you know there are nearly 130,000 children currently in the foster care system here in America waiting to be adopted by a forever family?
Well, and Ryan, that's not even all of the kids in the system total. That is just the number of kids whose parents have had their rights permanently terminated, and those kids, that 130,000 number, they're in limbo. They're waiting for someone to step up and say, we'll give you a home. Yeah. Caring for orphans is important to God, and Dr. Dobson, it's important to us here at Family Talk.
Well, there are so many children who desperately need a mom and dad, and my heart goes out to every single one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember what my mother and dad meant to me when I was a child. Just the security of their arms, of their love, of their attention. I knew they cared for me. What would my life have been like without them to have made that contribution to me? These children have none of it. Mm-hmm. No one cares. No one seems to know who they are. And so I want to tell you that foster and adoptive parents who choose to care for needy children and give them loving homes are heroes to me. Mm-hmm. And today on Family Talk, we're going to focus on one such family that's making such a difference in the lives of foster care kids. This family is one of a kind. I haven't come across anybody quite like the Barrett family. Mm-hmm. And in this case, especially those who are adopting emotionally troubled children because of what they've been through. And some of their experiences have been horrendous. So a short time ago, I sat down with a very unique couple named Billy Jack and Ann Barrett. I've already mentioned their last names. Some of our listeners might be familiar with these folks because they were featured on a very popular television show, ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
Doctor, that is the one network program that we watch in our house. I tell you, my whole family watches it, and it makes me cry every week. I remember their episode.
Well, the producers of that program have made a great contribution to many worthy families, and the Barretts are among them. Billy Jack is a horseman, a rancher. He's been the manager of the United States Air Force Academy Equestrian Center, and going all the way back to 1980. Ann is a homemaker and a homeschool teacher. They have nine children, whom we'll learn much more about over the next couple of days of this program. At the time I recorded this conversation with the Barretts, they had six children living at home, two of which were their biological children and four who were adopted. Since we first talked with them, they've adopted two other teenage girls. Later in this program, we'll catch up with what they're doing now.
These are very, very special people, Dad. And the road they've walked has not been an easy one. They've faced their share of troubles, like any family. And I hope our listeners will pray for them. Mm-hmm. Even now, as we hear your conversation with this family, here now on this Family Talk broadcast are the Barretts.
You all have been working with horses for most of your lives, haven't you? That's a passion for you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And Billy Jack, you became acquainted with horses and really got into the way they think and riding them and being in rodeos and everything else when you lived in Texas, right? Is that how this came to be?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
And who introduced you to horses?
Well, my father was a Baptist minister, but he grew up on a ranch, and he had a passion for horses also, and that's what he did in his recreational time when he had time to get relief from his ministry. And, of course, his father before him was quite a horseman also, so I think it's running the family.
Well, you all have another passion. one that's even more important than horses. But in your case, they have been melded together.
Absolutely.
And you are using horses to accomplish something that you care about very, very deeply. You not only care about riding and all that goes with horses, but adoption is your mission in life, isn't it?
Yes.
And you really care about those children out there that are in need, are lonely, are wounded, many of them abused, many of them have gone through horrible things, who think nobody will ever love them, nobody will ever care. And you not only have, you and Billy Jack have not only brought them into your home under a foster care situation, but you have made them part of your family, haven't you?
Yes. When a friend of ours, a very dear Christian man, a child psychiatrist, made us aware of this increasing problem in the United States of abandoned children, I knew what we were supposed to do. And it's something that both Bill and I prayed about a long time. It was both of our decisions to do this.
Is that true, Bill?
That's correct.
It's not an easy thing to bring an older, adopted, abused child into your family. That can be very difficult. Were you in favor of it?
That was something that I was not in favor of initially, but I felt a strong call from God to do that, and I learned to listen to Him. At one point, I thought I was probably wasting my life out chasing cows in the mountains, and then after Ann and I came together, I realized that that was just all part of the plan that God had in preparing us for the mission that we had to do.
Hmm. Now, you have two biological children. Rebecca and Claire.
We actually have four. We have two that I brought into our marriage.
I see.
Krista and Rachel, they're 25 and 23. And then at the time that we started this, Rebecca and Clara were very young. And they were the children that Bill and I had together.
All right. So you began opening your heart to children who were in foster care. And how do you go about bringing another child into the family, especially one that's not a baby? How did you do that?
I think the thing that's always amazed me is I'm off wandering around and God has His plan.
Yeah.
And I received a phone call from a doctor at a local mental hospital that said, Billy Jack, I have a 9-year-old boy that needs a role model and a mentor. And I immediately said, well, I'll help you look for one. But I went home and I talked to my wife about it, and I felt, and we felt, led to do this. So I started going to the mental institution and spending time with this 9-year-old boy. And often he was, when I would arrive there, he would be kept in what they call a quiet room, just a empty room about 8 by 10 possibly, so that he wouldn't harm himself or anybody else. And reluctantly, after a few visits, they would let me take him out in the yard, and I'd take a lariat rope, and we'd go out there and play with the rope or toss a football around or spend a little time together. Huh. And then after a while, I would basically, what I call, hand receipt him or check him out for the day, and I would take him horseback riding with me for the day. Then I'd have to have him back that evening for his medications and to return him.
Yeah. That was Dusty?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And he had a sister, or still does.
That's right.
That were not kept together in foster care, right?
They had been together, I think, for their first maybe 6 moves. But because their behavior had gotten so bad, the caseworkers really believed that they had a better chance of placing these children in foster care if they separated them. And even at that age, loss can be just horrendous, and abandonment. And so they both, their behavior got so bad, increasingly bad, that Daphne actually ended up at the mental hospital first. And then 3 months later, Dusty arrived.
Well, tell them how Daphne's prayer.
Daphne, this child psychiatrist that worked with her calls her his angel. She was at, before they ended up in the mental hospital, the Department of Human Services sends out notifications of camps and events going on that are open to kids in the foster care system. And one happened to be a Christian camp called Royal Family Kids Camp. Both of the families, each one individually that had Daphne and Dusty, sent these two kids to camp. And so they met at camp at the same time that they learned about God. Mm. After camp was over, they were separated. So when Daphne ended up in the hospital, there was a lady there And I have a picture that I brought here that she drew for the psychiatrist of her going to church, because she felt if she could go to church, she could find her brother, because God, she had learned about him. He was pretty cool. And so they came up with a process for a mentor to take a child out of the hospital to church and bring her back with no overnights. So Daphne was actually coming to our church. And when she came to Sunday school, she asked the class to pray to find her brother. Within 2 weeks, he was brought to the mental hospital. So Daphne's thinking, this God is pretty neat. You ask for something real important like that, and he listens. So Daphne's relationship with God has been very different from the beginning.
Now, here you all are with a family and a couple of kids, and every family struggles one way or another, I'm sure financially and every other way. And you go into a mental hospital with a brother and sister whose behavior is so bad that they have essentially incarcerated them, and you are willing to take steps to bring them into your family as a son and daughter.
Yes.
It was scary.
One of the things that we had learned from working with horses is that when you look in their eyes, they truly are the gateway to the soul. And through the eyes, you can see the soul behind them. And in both of these children's cases, we could see that.
You knew very well that you don't take a formerly abused child who has, in this case, they had never eaten at a family table, or at least not their birth family.
Yes.
They didn't know what a family was like, and they don't accept authority, and they're acting out in every way. You knew what that meant.
Yes.
You meant bringing these unruly, difficult, wounded children into your home.
And teaching them to eat with a knife, fork, and a spoon.
They didn't know how to do that.
No table manners whatsoever.
Proper hygiene. A lot of things were missed.
You know, in a much less meaningful way. We used to have a little dog named Siggy, Sigmund Freud. A lot of people remember Siggy because I wrote a lot about him in my first book, Dare to Discipline, and also in the revision of the book. And when he died after 17 years, my daughter and I wanted another dog, and we talked about it, and we said, we want to find a dog that needs a friend. We could go to get a pedigreed dog, but we decided to go to the pound, which is a very difficult thing to do. I don't like to go there. And I mean, it tore my heart out. I'm tender to dogs. I'm more tender to children, but I still love dogs. And so my daughter and I walked through, and there was these lonely dogs in there just begging you to come over so they could lick your hand, and they were all yapping and everything. And we came to this cage, and at the back of the cage was this very sick little puppy that had been abused. She had a huge scar on her mouth where somebody hit her with a hoe, and also the back leg had a scar about 8 inches on it. I don't know what had happened to her. And she was unable to get up and walk to the cage door. And we brought her home, and Shirley said, "It's the ugliest dog I've ever seen in my life." She looked like a pit bull, but not a healthy one. And she became the best dog we have ever had. Mm-hmm. Strong, healthy, big. We loved Mitzi. So I can identify a little bit with the way we felt. We wanted to help a dog that needed a friend. You did that with children, mm-hmm. eternal souls. That grabs me by the heart.
You know, another thing, as we went to work through the adoption of Dusty and Daphne, originally there was a lot of discussion about whether we should or we could, because the professional opinion was that you cannot put these two problem children in a family, and you cannot put them in a family with older siblings and younger siblings, because children might become perpetrators because they've been perpetrated against.
Yeah.
And so the thing
that
is—
That took guts. It took prayer.
The whole thing is a walk of faith, because the first step I knew was that when all the experts said, "No, you can't adopt these kids, we just want you to mentor them," then I felt like that if God was calling us to adopt these children, we didn't need to get lawyers, we didn't need to get help, we would let him handle it, and we'd just pray about it.
Mm-hmm. And it was something that everyone, including the caseworkers and the Department of Human Service people, said, we really need to go slow on this, just one step at a time. Let's not rush anything. And Bill and I both agreed, let's take it one step at a time. But when God has a plan, everything falls into place, where all of us were standing, shaking our heads, saying, this is happening so fast, and it's happening the right way and falling into place. One of the hardest things, when we took Daphne and Dusty out of the mental hospital, AJ was there. He had just been brought in. His brother had been kept at the first foster home, and they eventually adopted him. But AJ had some he had true reactive attachment disorder.
Yeah,
and he was there, rad. And we got to know AJ. And when we left, he cried. He was standing there crying as we took Daphne and Dusty away. And he was saying, please take me with you. Yeah. Well, we knew we were going to have our hands full first with Daphne and Dusty, and we had to concentrate and focus on them. But for 3 years, we tracked AJ. And the child,
3 years.
3 years. We tracked and prayed and tracked and prayed. And that whole time, I was saying, God, why are you taking so long? It's 3 years wasted. It wasn't. It was 3 years that incredible people came into AJ's life, people that are part of our family now, and started him on the way to healing with the real serious therapy for reactive attachment disorder.
Didn't you hear, were you not told that he was one of the most difficult and least adoptable children anywhere in the country?
They actually told us that, I think at that time there were 900 kids in this system, and they said he is the number one worst one.
And reactive attachment disorder children, if not treated, escalate to killing animals and then to killing people. It's very serious.
Hey, famous people who have had RAD include Adolf Hitler, Saddam Hussein, Jeffrey Dahmer, and many others. They come out of that pattern.
That were not treated. Now, a good example of a child that had reactive attachment disorder and was treated is Helen Keller. Huh. And if people want to understand more about that, rent The Miracle Worker and watch how that was dealt with. That's how you treat reactive attachment disorder.
We have some recordings of these kids. By the way, you did eventually adopt AJ, too. It took 3 years to get him.
Yes, we got AJ.
And he's a wonderful kid. I mean, I met him in my office. I cannot believe he is now where you described he used to be.
And as we heard earlier, AJ is continuing to do very well. In fact, we got word recently that he just joined the Army and he is ready to serve his country. If you can't be with us for the rest of this program, make sure to download it at myfamilytalk.com. But don't go anywhere. Stay with us. We're about to hear some recordings of the Barrett children done at their home just a short time before this conversation took place. So let's listen now to what they shared.
Well, I was going to get adopted before I got adopted by the Barretts, and it fell through. And then I just went back into the foster care system. And I was in 12 homes in 2 years, I think it was.
I'd get there, they'd have me a couple months, and then, you know, get rid of me. Because everyone else had done it. So, didn't see why they'd be any different.
They have lots of patience with us. I mean, because other families that tried working with us. The second we told them no or didn't work with them or go to bed on time or didn't get our homework done or something like that, they'd just get rid of us. They'd pass us on. I felt angry and sort of like disappointed that I didn't have a family. And it was just kind of upsetting.
I was on an unadoptable list.
I never thought it was going to happen. I thought that a family would take me in and then just not want me and put me back into the system again because my diabetes was too much to handle for some families.
It makes you kind of feel like a dog because you get passed around. It's about the same deal.
I thought that parents kept their children.
Now that I look back on it, I know I would have ended up in juvie or something like that. I guess I figured it was hopeless.
We all got kind of close to Dusty, and then one night we would take him back to the institution and you could hear kids screaming and it just sounded awful, total chaos. On the way home, Mom explained to me that that's where Dusty lived and kind of why he was there. And so then that night when Dad was tucking me in, I told him that we couldn't leave him there to bring him home. And Dad asked me, he said, well, what do we do about his sister? And I just told him we'll bring her home too.
They took a 13-year-old, 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, and another 8-year-old in. And that's something no one else would do.
Because I was such a mean little punk. I was a little jerk all the time and broke stuff and just a hateful person to be around.
At first, we just figured out just trying to be bad. Maybe that we'd get rid of them before we got attached to them. But it didn't work. So it was, no matter how bad we were, they kept us. And that we finally figured that out. And they're just amazing people. I remember one day I got mad at Mom. And so I figured I was going to take one of her china plates that her grandma or her mom gave her. So I took that and I decided I was going to smash it on the floor. And then she sat there and held me. And I just remember screaming at her because I was so mad at her. And I was expecting her to just call, like, the foster system or someone to come get me. But it didn't work out how I planned.
And so when we first brought Dusty and Daphne home the first Christmas, the two of them were throwing a fit over something or other. And Mom told them, she was like, I can handle a 1,600-pound, 17-hand horse that can hurt me a whole lot worse than you can. So what makes you think I can't handle you? She wasn't going to give up, and she was going to be there all the time. And it didn't matter if they hated her. They could call her what they wanted. That wasn't going to have any effect on her that God had brought them to her to raise. So, and she was going to do that regardless of what they did.
It changed my life a lot because I came closer to God, I know, because I soon realized that miracles do happen.
I was happy that I finally had a family that wasn't going to give up on me. And it's just exciting the first time you get a family that you know that's actually true to what they're saying.
They stick together and they look to God for everything that they do, you know.
If she got angry at me, she'd spend her day just hugging me and holding me where she knew that's what I needed, but I didn't think it at the time, but that's what helped me and that's what I needed, was to be held. I think that's what every kid needs, actually.
Luann and Ryan, I can still remember the first time I heard that recording. I had not listened to what the children had to share until that moment in the studio. And I want to tell you, it moved me deeply.
Yeah.
I remarked at the time that I was glad that we were at the end of the program because I was a wreck. And I really could not continue the interview from that point. I just needed a number of minutes to compose myself.
Well, Dad, how could you not be moved by what those kids had to say? It is almost impossible to think that there are 130,000 mm-hmm. other children like them out there right now waiting for a mom or a dad like Ann and Billy Jack to look at them and say, I love you. I'll give you a home. I'll make you part of a family.
Well, and they each have a name and they're each known by God. They're just precious, precious children. Doctor, we actually talked with the Barretts recently to find out what those kids have been up to. It really is amazing to see how the Lord is working in their lives since you spoke with them. Why don't you give us an update?
Well, Jennifer is 21 now, and so is Daphne. She's a wife and mother. AJ is 19 now, and he just joined the Army. Dusty is serving his second tour in Iraq.
Wow.
He's 22. I shudder to think where these children might be today if the Barretts hadn't stepped into their mm-hmm. lives. And God bless them for what they've done. We're going to hear more from them next time, and I hope our listeners will make sure to be with us at that time.
They don't want to miss it, but if they can't tune in on their local radio station, Doctor, they can always stream us or download the podcast at myfamilytalk.com, or then give us a call. Remember, we always send a complimentary CD, which would actually include both today's conversation and the one planned for tomorrow.
Our number is 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. You know, Luann and Dad, as I sit here and listen to this, I think, wouldn't this be a neat program to give to someone who is foster caring to children mm-hmm. or has adopted kids? I think they would love it, and it might minister to them.
Again, give us a call, 877-732-6825. 6825 or visit myfamilytalk.com, where, Ryan, we actually have some additional information for people who would like to learn more about adoption.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you're kind of the techie at the table today. I'm going to ask you a question. I think I could answer it, but you'll answer it better.
Okay.
There are many people who would like to hear our broadcast, or they have relatives in other cities where we're not heard.
Mm-hmm.
We're on a lot of stations across the country, but there are many more cities where we're not heard. And yet every person with a computer can hear us at any time of the day,
mm-hmm.
just by clicking on our website and hitting one button, and they can hear us. Explain more about that.
I think you just answered it. If people go to myfamilytalk.com, it is very easy to find not only each day's daily broadcast, but all of our archives.
Yeah.
If you missed a show, you heard about a show in the past that you want to listen to, you can click on archives. There's a full listing, and there's a play button every single day where you can hear today's broadcast.
So there's no excuse for not listening. Listening to us.
That's right.
And we are, I need to remind everybody, a listener-supported program. We exist by the contribution of our friends. And for those who are going through hard times and you can't give, just pray for us.
Yes.
That would make all the difference in the world.
And they can always be a part of this ministry, again, at that same website, myfamilytalk.com.